Today's program has been brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
Broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to heritageradionetwork.org.
Thursday, that means it's time to meet your maker. I am your host, Rachel Wharton. Today in the studio with me, I have my occasional co-host, John Taggart, who is also the maker of this theme song.
Hello.
And I also have Wayne Holmsheck and Betty Fong, who make flat whites, Lamingtons, I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that correctly or what that is, and most especially Australian pies, because they are the owners of Pie Face, which is a chain from Sydney that has just opened its first American outpost. Wayne and Betty, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks, Rachel.
And I guess, well, for American audiences, I'm sure people in Sydney know your story backwards and forwards, but you have a pretty amazing backstory to how you came to do this in the first place. So how did this come to be? What were you doing before?
We were doing a few different things, actually. Betty and I were dating at the time. I was an investment banker. We also had a fashion label together called Pablo Nevada. Betty was running that. We were sort of both doing that. You know, when I wasn't at work, we were both doing it together and whatnot, doing catwalk shows.
You're in Sydney at this point.
Yeah, all in Sydney. And I decided to leave the bank in 2002 and just do something purely, you know, entrepreneurial and creative. And we'd already had a business together in fashion. So we thought, what else can we do that's kind of Australians get into? And Australians are actually more into their sport and their food than they are into fashion in a general sense. So we thought, well, you know, we like eating. Let's try food.
And you had originally made them for a fashion show, is that right?
We
That's
did.
That's the legend.
We did. We as you know, with every fashion show, you theme it, and we did turn of the century Australian sports. And we thought, why not get rid of the catwalk, have a football stadium, and serve meat pies and have cheerleaders and things like that while our show, and actually have people, like two sports commentators, call the show as opposed to having music.
Uh-huh.
And we had radio playing very softly in the background, and we served meat pies. And the reaction at that show was just, you know, got us thinking that, you know what, this could be kind of fun.
That was before you decided to go into making them. It was that spurred the idea.
Yeah, that and the fact that our brother-in-law, who is now our production chef, he's a French-born, French-trained pastry chef, he'd already had a business called Dinky Dye Pies and Pastries.
And did he make the ones for that show?
He did, yeah.
So I guess to step back, so you were combining sports and meat pies, so as an American who's never even been to Australia, so obviously this is something you eat during a sporting event. Maybe explain a little bit like the importance of this food item to Australian culture.
Do you know, the meat pie is like hamburgers to Americans. Mm. I grew up on meat pies. I was born in Australia. You could have a meat pie for breakfast. So you didn't have to go to the football. You just, you know, at school you could order meat pie from the tuck shop. It's our national food.
All the convenience stores, every convenience store, every gas station.
So it's not something you made at home. It's more something you would get out.
You could make them at home, but most people would just buy them either at the grocery store and heat them at home, or they'd buy them, you know, at their local pie shop.
Like in a banana, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's the New York pie, is an empanada.
What was your brother? His name, it was Dinky Doo. Is that what it was? That's so funny.
Dinky Dye. It means the real thing.
The real thing.
Like fair dinkum, Dinky Dye is kind of a.
How are the pies that you he? So he's the person who helped you create the recipes for the very first one.
Sort of. We, as all family businesses go, it started out a bit sort of rough and ready. And we came to the view that we needed to do it on our own to start with and find our own way. So he kind of gave us a little bit of advice, and then we kind of went off on our own, and we created our own brand called Pie Face, and we decided to put faces on pies and, you know, determine what was inside. So we didn't take a lot of advice early on, later on, Francois joined us as our full-time production chef. So that was in 2007. So we went on our own for about 3-4 years.
But before he came along.
Yeah.
So did you make them at home? Like, how did you perfect your recipe? Did you make millions of them, different techniques, more butter? Or actually, is there butter in, what's your fat in a
It's butter. It's butter. What we did first was, the original idea was Wayne and our, well, my brother-in-law being in partnership together. But then when Wayne said, no, look, you know, I'll do it on my own, I thought, well, you know, before you actually, we actually do it without someone that knows what they're doing, let's actually make a meat pie ourselves. So we did actually make it ourselves, the base dough. We bought the puff, the filling. I thought, you know what, this isn't that hard. We did actually employ sous chefs and pastry chefs to actually work with our recipes, and we just tasted and tasted and tasted until we were happy with the flavour profiles.
The real, so the real difference, I think, between our pies and, say, some of the other pies that you would get in the United Kingdom or even in Australia, or here for that matter in New York City, is that our pastry is very much a French method. It's a puff pastry. It's really soft. It's like a croissant with meat inside almost.
Really?
Yeah, no. So it's a very soft, pliable sort of pastry.
As opposed to like a heavy pie crust.
Exactly. And therefore, it's a little bit, you know, softer and messier, but it's really yummy, and it's very, very... as I said, very easy to eat.
So when you first opened, did you start large, or did you have like a stand at a market somewhere? Was it like six stores at once when you opened?
No, it was one.
One.
Yeah, we were foolish. We went straight for a store. Do you know what I mean? We didn't start, you know, just making it and then trying to sell it to people or in a store somewhere. We got a lease and went full on with it.
But we had a... It wasn't just about...
Did you have a truck?
No, we didn't.
Here now they would.
Yeah. We still don't have any food trucks. You know, it's something we've been, you know, everyone asks that, and we've been thinking about it. But we really, the vision for the pie was more than just the product itself. It was the whole look and feel of the place.
Yes.
It was what we serve, how we served it. It was the attitude and quirkiness, you know, and the fact that we're putting faces on pies and each face looks at you and has a different expression, and that tells you what's inside.
Yeah, we haven't even mentioned that yet. That's like why you're called Pie Face. So tell me a little bit about how that happened and maybe the different faces and how you draw them in the first place.
Wayne and I have this, we like to, just through the fashion, we like to do things a little bit fun, a little bit quirkier. And in Australia, to actually, because obviously your pie is actually a filling, whether it's meat or vegetarian, and it's covered in pastry. So to signify what's inside the pie, you might have a triangle, or you might have a square, or another bit of pastry, which doesn't make sense, like, you know, unless you know that shop really well, or you have to read through, you know, their legend and things like that. And when Wayne one night said, you know, should I do this pie business or not, so and so my friend said, you know, you should just call it Pie Face. And I looked at Wayne and I said, that's perfect, let's call it Pie Face, and we'll put faces on the pies, and the mouth would change to say what flavor is actually inside the pie. So it's like our own little Da Vinci code, I guess.
That's so cool.
That is pretty cool. So Wayne, you came from the United States, so did you just take to the pies and meet, was it more you than Betty?
Well, you know, I grew up on chicken pot pies, you know, the Swanston ones, which aren't, you know, great, but I still
They're
have
okay.
fond memories of eating those and Lipton's cup of soup, you know, every day for lunch. So in my mind, Americans were... They already get it. They just
right.
haven't been given it yet, if you know what I mean. And so for me, it wasn't a hard hard extension for Americans to like it as much as I did.
I'm actually curious how, because Australians, I mean, this is literally their bread and butter. So when you talk about the difference in the crust for Australians, that's probably a big deal. What did they say when you opened?
You know what? That's what people tell us that they love. I mean, the filling's great, but the crust as well. It is. Our pastry top, there's a million layers folded in, basically, the technique we actually use. So they love the crust. It's very different. I mean, that's why we start at Pie Face. It's because we wanted a really, really good pie. We want it to be accessible. Australians, everyone has a memory of their favourite pie, like going down to the snow or having it at 2 o'clock in the morning. We want it, you know, to be able to make it accessible for everyone, and that's what we want to do here as well, like in New York or in America.
You're actually open 24 hours.
Exactly.
That's awesome. That's really hard to find.
Oh, and again, where's the location at again?
It's the corner of 53rd and Broadway, just the Ed Sullivan Theatre, and we don't shut. And we encourage people to come at 3 a.m.
Oh, that's great.
After they've been out, you know, partying right. and drinking and, you know, and share with us, like, you know.
Yeah, because in Australia, it's kind of a cult food, you know, like the thing that Australians do, especially if they're in Sydney or Melbourne, is they go out to the clubs, and we literally have a shop in King's Cross right under, you know, all the big nightclubs, and everyone just piles out
so there,
onto the
there's
street.
24-hour pie places in Australia then?
Yeah, a lot of them. Yeah, most of the ones that we have on the street, whenever we are allowed to open, you know, Sydney's a little tricky because they don't like you to trade 24/7, but
right.
But with certain stores do, and so it's kind of like the thing that a lot of Americans and Brits who come to Sydney, who go out partying, their fond memory is, you know, going to Pie Face at 3 a.m. and getting their pies after clubbing. And we get so many Facebooks and Twitters and emails of people
imagine.
That have done that.
Yeah, you have like 11,000 likes on Facebook.
Is that just the American Facebook page too, or is that everything?
Probably.
It's the Australian, but the American one's just getting up and going now. I'd probably take advice on what that's up to. But yeah, we're starting to collect a lot of friends here.
So how long have you been open?
January, Australia Day, which is January 26th.
Was that on purpose?
No. Do you know what? We wanted to open for Thanksgiving last year.
With a turkey pie?
Turkey pie. We just had
We're learning issues. The hard way about how to build stores in New York City.
What's difficult about it, actually, other than everything?
Yeah, pretty much everything. unions, right, you know, the costs of doing business here is pretty high. To get the store open, but once it's open and running, it's actually better here than it is Australia, but it's more expensive to build.
What was in your shop before you opened it?
It was a CBS store.
A CBS?
It was non-food usage, which means, you know, in builder terms, it's going to be more expensive.
Yeah, right. A lot of work.
Had the store, when we took it over, had three walls and a glass shop front. We knocked out one whole side wall, so that took a lot of time as well.
Wait, I think you were saying before we started that you were actually on Letterman because it's right next door.
Yeah.
Tell us a little about that.
Yeah, well, I mean, from the moment I saw that site, I could just visualize us being there, and I could visualize Letterman popping in and kind of it all getting recognized on Letterman.
He does seem like a meat pie kind of guy.
He's a foodie, too.
Yeah.
But a meat pie kind of foodie.
Yeah.
And he likes quirky, you know, like, so... So when it was my first day in New York, looking around to sort of work out whether we were going to open here, and I saw that site and thought, if we can get that site, then yeah, we're going to open. And we did finally get the site, and we built the store, and it took, you know, a while to get it open, but pretty much from the moment we opened, the Letterman crew were down, you know, having pies and coffees, and then we actually did a little caricature of Paul and Dave. We made faces of each of them and put them on their desk one day. Mm-hmm. And then they, you know, pretty much called up straight away and wanted to do something with us.
So if you see David Letterman's face, what's inside your pie?
I think we just gave him a chunky steak.
Yeah. a classic pie.
So that's one thing we haven't even mentioned, was what's inside these babies. And like, even what they look like. So for, you know, people who are listening, I haven't been there either. So like, what are your pies look like and what's inside?
We do two sizes. So we do what we call our lunchtime size pie, which is about, how many inches is that?
It's like a, you know, the circumference of a Big Mac.
Uh-huh. Yeah, circumference of a Big Mac. And then we do a miniature version, which is like a half size, which is about 3 bites. And fillings vary from like a chunky steak, which is like lean beef that's been braised in a red wine gravy sauce for like 3 hours. We do a chicken and mushroom pie, which is, again, chunks of chicken breast and mushroom, and it's a white wine gravy sauce. We do vegetarian, but we put a spin on it, so it's a tandoori vegetarian pie. So it's got spicy tandoori, you know, flavors to it, which is unusual, I guess, for, you know, a lot of vegetarian food. We do Thai green curry chicken, which again is chicken breast, but in a green curry coconut sauce. Bacon and egg is our breakfast pie. We do minced beef, which is great for kids. It's got tomato chutney and cumin in it. So quite, we use, it's all natural ingredients, very like definite flavor profiles, and that's what's nice about it. It's good for, you know,
right,
good,
well,
good snack.
It's like both comforting and exotic at the same time, which
yes
is, and those are all kind of, those are somewhat traditional flavors that you'd find in Australia, right? Because
yeah,
there's so many different cultures.
Pretty much that's our core Australian offer. And then in America we offered a Mexican pie.
Oh really?
And
that green chit, like what's in that one?
It's ground beef and jalapeno and a bit of pineapple,
a little some chili and, you know, some pineapple.
And then we did a southern barbecue pulled pork pie, which yeah has been
now what
really
about
good.
Like, is there a sweet pie? Or it's all savory?
No, we do about 13 different sweet pies, too.
Oh, wow.
But is that something that you'd find in Australia, or is that new here?
Yeah. Do you know what? We do offer in Australia, but it obviously doesn't sell as much as in... I mean, the Americans, they love their sweet pies. They love the apple pie, cherry, blueberry. We introduce key lime. We've got pumpkin here, which we can't make pumpkin pie in Australia.
But they're all miniature, so they're all, like, single, like, serve, like, petite four.
Pies.
They're all petite four size. And we have a little suitcase where you can carry 12 of them to the office. So it's kind of like the cupcake thing.
Or out at 3 a.m.
Now, what about, do you serve beer there?
happen.
We don't, but we're thinking about maybe we've got a few sites planned sort of down near NYU that we might think about doing it.
Gotcha.
That would be dangerous if you did serve beer and stayed open 24 hours and served food that's great for eating when you're drunk. What? No, I know.
Midtown has like no food at all, and this is fantastic.
I know, yes. Yeah. Actually, if you looked out, I mean, I think there's like a, if you look out from where you are, you know, there's like a TGI, there's a bunch of chains. Yeah. I mean, that's what's there.
Bubba Gump.
Yeah, there's a lot of coffee, but not very good. I mean, there's a lot of sandwich chains. There's a lot of that stuff in Midtown. Whereas once we get downtown, there's less of that. And there's more night traffic, so that's really where we like to be.
That's why Dave's getting your coffee. There's nowhere to get your coffee.
Oh, yes. Definitely. Because when I introduced you, I said what you made. One of the things is that I actually don't have any idea what it is. I know what a flat white is, I think. You should probably explain it. But what's a Lamington? Am I even saying that correctly? A Lamington?
A Lamington.
Lamington. What are those two things?
By the way, that's Paul Schaefer's favorite thing.
A Lamington?
He scoffed it, as we say in Australia, when we were on Letterman.
Was that a scarf or a scoff?
Scoff.
Scoff. So what is it?
Essentially, it's a cake, so it's a very light vanilla sponge. It's got a fine layer of raspberry right through the center. You then dip the whole thing, so it's a cube, giant cube. Well, not giant, but a decent sized cube. You then dip the whole thing in dark chocolate and roll it in shredded coconut, and it's delicious.
That's a classic Australian dessert.
Yes.
Whoa.
It's very.
Where did it come from?
Did that? When? Yeah. When? Do you know when that started in Australia?
Don't know.
Sorry, in Australia is a mix.
But it's we take from everyone. And claim it as ours, basically.
What would Australia's original cuisine have been like? Nuts and berries.
Do you know what? It
was all British. I mean, it was a British penal colony,
which is what the pie is. It's just been influenced by everything.
Yeah, and what the Australians did is they took the British pie, which is traditionally pub food. You'd sit down with a knife and fork and a pint of beer, and you'd eat it for dinner. And we made it portable, and we turned it into more, you know, casual, you know, quick serve sort of food. So I think the Australians kind of adopted it to make it portable.
Definitely. Because remember when we were in London, Rachel, and the only thing we could get late at night was a bagel.
That was right.
You know, we couldn't get a pie or anything like that. And the only pie
despite
we saw
searching
were at Borough
desperately.
Market. You know,
It's weird. I mean, you know, you'd think the UK would have tons of these sort of places, and they don't. There's like one or two, you know, small chains with one or two shops, but none of them are open in late night precincts. So that's, you know, where we're going to go next.
Actually, funnily enough, I was a co-author on a book that came out last fall called Hand Pies, and we did profiles of people who make pies, such as your own, all around the country, and we were trying really hard to find an Australian or a British pie, and I had the hardest time finding any place with any like actual shop of any reputation. And I wish I had known about you guys when I was doing that book. But we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back to talk more about flat whites with the owners of Pie Paste. This is Meet Your Maker.
For the past 10 years, Heritage Foods USA has had the great honor of announcing the arrival of a new generation of Good Shepherd Ranch Heritage Turkeys and a new chapter in the history of an endangered species. You have to eat them to save them. While many farmers now use the term, Frank Reese and his team raised the truest example of the original heritage turkey. According to the USDA, they remain the only farm allowed to use the name heritage on their label. We hope you reserve your healthy, naturally mating, flying, standard bronze, bourbon red, white holland, slate, black, or Narragansett turkey today. Let's do it again and support the brightest hope for the turkey. We guarantee these are the best tasting turkeys ever, or your money back. Prices start at $75. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
Welcome back to Meet Your Maker. Today we are talking to Wayne and Betty, who are the co-owners of Pie Face, which is a Sydney-based Sydney-based pie chain that has just opened its first shop here in New York City. I was asking before the break, getting you to define a few of your menu items, and I'm actually most curious about coffee, about Australian coffee, like the term flat white, and I think there's probably others that I don't know. Like what? So what? When people say Australian coffee, like what is the profile of it typically?
Australian coffee, it's basically an espresso shot, so beans that have been freshly ground, and then they go through the machine with water, so it's espresso shot, and then the milk has been textured with a hot wand, and it becomes frothy and creamy, and then you pour it on top of the espresso. And the difference between, say, flat white and latte, cappuccino, flat white has no froth at the top.
Oh.
And your real flat white drinkers will get a teaspoon and make sure there's nothing there, otherwise they'll send it back.
So it's literally flat.
It's literally flat. And then a latte has got like about maybe a little fingernail of froth, and cappuccino is frothy and it's got the chocolate on top.
Have you been doing the coffee since you began?
Yes.
Even
important. Australia's a very strong coffee drinking population, and you know, New York definitely is as well, so it's something.
I think Australia is probably the most advanced coffee market in the world in terms of milk-based espresso. The Italians are really into their straight espresso, you know, just the straight shot of short black or whatever, whereas the Australians have taken that and turned the milk-based espresso into an art form sort of thing. And then Starbucks obviously came along and sort of took it to the extreme, and they've got 20 ounces of milk in their cups.
Yes.
And the Australians don't like that much milk. They like a little bit of milk, like 8 ounces is like a normal size for an Australian, not 24. And they like their smaller cups, and they like milk-based, lattes. And whereas there's not a lot of espresso shots sold in Australia, whereas in Italy you'd probably get mainly espresso shots.
Or you'd have them 5 times a day. Do you have a flat white 5 times a day, or is it a once-a-day thing?
We have, interestingly, we're the only ones that in the world that we're aware of that sell our coffee by the strength, by the shots.
Oh, right. So, really? Yeah. So what are the levels?
So we have two blends, a hard blend and a soft blend. And the hard blend's a little stronger. It's a stronger roast. It's a darker roast. And it's also got more caffeinated. It's more caffeinated beans. And then the soft blend is a little more, Arabica, mellow. And so those are the two blends. But then what we do is we actually put more or less coffee in the cylinder, and we extract more or less water through it to create different strengths of shots. And so we have four strengths. The first one is a decaf. It's called Still Asleep, and the face is sleeping. And the next one's called Open My Eyes, and it's your basic shot of coffee with milk in it. And then we have Start My Heart, which is the strong blend. And then we have Kick My Ass, which is like a strong blend with a super strong shot in it. So it's kind of like the equivalent of Red Bull, in the carbonated drinks world.
What did Letterman, what does he get every day?
He gets like a Kick My Ass with 3 turbo shots. What do you guys call turbo shots, or red eyes or something?
I don't know. I always just get coffee.
So he still drinks drip. Like a lot of Americans like their drip, but then they put like an espresso shot on top. So that's, I think, what he does with 3 of those. So it's pretty intense.
Where do you get your beans?
Well, we source them from all over the world, but we roast in Australia. We have a roaster who works alongside of us in Australia. Literally, his roaster is right next to our factory.
Oh, cool.
So he roasts specifically for us, and he's consulted to us. He's come across, and he's
Do you know Toby?
Yeah, we do, actually.
They just opened... You guys have basically come at the right time to start the little trendlet, because he just opened a beautiful shop in Williamsburg.
Yeah, I haven't been to it, but I've heard it's great, and it's going really well. And in fact, the people that run it are good friends with some of the guys that work with us, so they chat a lot.
They should stock your pies.
Yeah, we don't really wholesale our pies. We want the full experience, right. You know, with the faces and, you know, we pipe our music from Australia. So you go really? To the store, there's like Australian rap playing and stuff like that. So
how would you define Australian rap?
It sounds like U.S. rap with an Australian accent.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's a band called the Hilltop Hoods. They're really good, actually. They're really good rappers. I'm surprised.
Since you have one shop, I'm assuming that the pies are actually, they're all made there?
We actually have a kitchen in Brooklyn where we've set it all up to make all the pastry from scratch, because making puff pastry is a big process.
Well, yeah, so they have to, what is, there's a, with that move.
The big, yeah, there's a, like a big, the, a big dough break right. machine. And so we literally buy in the flour, the butter, all that stuff. We mix it all up, and then we roll it out, and we rest it. You have to rest it for like a day or two.
Give me a number here. How many pies a day are you pushing out?
Well, in the U.S., we're probably making a few thousand a day or something. But in Australia, we're making 30 or 40,000 a day.
Right.
And it's still made by hand. I mean, the pastry's all rolled out by hand. There's a little machine where you actually, it's like a little assembly line, and then we hand fill the pies, and they're on a little assembly line, and then we put the tops on. Then we hand face it. So most of it's still done by hand, but, you know, as we get bigger, we're learning to sort of, some of the more mundane processes where, you know, we're automating, but all the important stuff we're doing by hand.
Was it pretty easy to translate? Is Australian butter and flour different than ours? I bet it is.
It is different. It is different. Different moisture content, things like that. But, you know, we got there.
So you had to adjust. We had to adjust it.
The climate too, right? You know.
Yeah, the temperature inside is really important. Yeah. Like, you can't use all butter. We use all butter in our pastry, and you have to have a certain coolness. Otherwise, the butter doesn't perform in the pastry, and you know, the little things like that that we've worked out. You know, the meat. And, you know, sourcing all the raw ingredients, because it's all fresh and local. So we pretty much, in fact, we quite like the American pies even a little bit better than the Australian pies, to be honest.
How would you define the difference?
They're just little things. And, you know, it's like anything. If you had the opportunity to do something the second time around, you always do it just that little bit better, and you're a bit more, you know, focused and a bit more, you know, definite.
It's a clean sheet of paper. You know, 9 years we've been doing it in Australia, and we come here with a clean sheet of paper. And everything's like from scratch, and so yeah, it's worked out really well.
What was the when you were thinking about opening here? What was the number one thing you're like, this time we are not doing that, or this time we are definitely doing this? One of the things you most wanted to change,
probably just where we open. We want to make sure we get the right locations, because when you're first starting out, you don't have a lot of confidence, and you know, you don't know what you're capable of doing, so you tend to go for sites that maybe aren't as high profile, or you try to stick to sort of low risk sites, and so you kind of make mistakes when you do that. And so if we had it to do, you know, now we're sort of going for what we think are going to be really good sites for us.
You're certainly not in a low profile site.
You can't go wrong, because there's nobody. Like, that's the best thing for a food person or a restaurant, is to go to Times Square now, because it's a guaranteed.
Yeah, except the rents are guaranteed to send you broke too.
Right.
Are you required to have some flashing sign in that part of Manhattan?
We couldn't afford the flashing sign after we got the budget. We thought, okay, that's the first thing to go, the flashing sign.
I mean, even the Duane Reade has like a Vegas style thing going on.
Yeah, we've got this massive sign. I mean, one of the reasons we were so attracted is there's this huge CBS sign that was there. And so as part of the deal, we got that big sign, and we put this massive pie on it, you know, which is like a moon. It's like a full moon, but it's a pie staring down at you.
Wow.
So that, you know, that was worth something, just to have that presence there. But we left the flashing lights off of it.
Oh, so tell me a little bit how you did. You had to source, then you had to get beef here and chicken here. So was that difficult, or who are you working with, of anyone of note, or?
Well, we sort of trial and error, but we have this great guy that we hired who runs the kitchen with us, and his name's Spencer Vogel, and he worked for some other, you know, like leading pastry companies and food production companies, so he had a really good network of suppliers, and so really just let him, you know, took a Francois, our brother-in-law, flew out here, and he lived here with us for 3 months developing all the recipes, so he and Spencer just... Basically, Spencer took the recipes and went out and found, you know, various local suppliers, and then we all got together.
What's an average cost for one of your, like, let's say your steak pie, how much is that?
The cost, the raw ingredients cost?
No. The cost of the actual pie.
We sell the big one for $5.95, and then we sell the little one for $275 or three for $750. So if you want like a sampler pack, you'd get three little ones for $750.
What's the actual name of the steak pie? Did it have Chunky in it?
It's called
I saw that.
It's Chunky Steak.
That was what David Letterman
Chunky
got.
Chunky Steak.
Chunky Steak.
I'm actually kind of curious. So, I mean, the little details, like you were talking about, the moisture content of the butter and the temperature for how it affects the dough. These are all like really microscopic little details that you've now learned about pastry. Is there any overlap from design, from the fashion? Is a whole new skill set?
You know, it's probably the overlap is more in branding. But then saying that, you know, the clothes we made, you could turn them inside out and wear them that way because they were beautifully made. So with what we found, the customer experience with our pies is actually really important. So, like for example, even though everything's made centrally, we actually bake it in store. So you can get a pie or croissant that literally came out of the oven 10 minutes ago. And it's beautiful because it's warm, it's crusty, and you know, and it's a great experience. So that part is probably, in terms of customer satisfaction with the fashion, customer satisfaction with our food is actually really important.
Right.
You know, and...
But just generally, logistics, I mean, it's you know, it's everything sounds good. Like, you know, all ideas are good until you have to execute. So the actual execution, you know, of this, especially this far from Australia, is not something that's that easy. So I think our fashion, being 10 years in fashion, having to produce ready-to-wear collections and catwalk shows on limited budgets, highly stressful all the time, that sort of constant sort of stress to perform and reinvent and all that stuff, kind of translate that to food, and you know, it seems a lot easier because we came up with our concept and then we just tweak it.
Mm-hmm.
In fashion, you're reinventing every 6 months.
Yes, in fact, Fashion Week's coming up. You guys should be there, right? There's like a couple of vendors who get right, because I've covered them from the food angle before, and there's always like three or four food, you know, there's always like wines of Rioja or something back there.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe we sponsor the right sort of fashion.
Yes.
I mean, if Marc Jacobs wants a few pies, right, we'll throw a few his way.
That's so funny. In Australia, do people really want you to constantly come up with new types of pies? Because I bet in America, that's what people always want. They always want like the spring pie or the holiday pie. Did you have to do that there?
We've had lots and lots of requests for steak and kidney, which is very English. But you know, we tried it, I think in year three that we were open, and the smell that came from the kitchen. I just said, that is, you know, while I'm at Pie Face, we will never make a steak and kidney pie. But we still get requests, and you know, there's things like steak and cheese, and you know,
but
curry
we do.
Pies.
I mean, it's you know, to reinvent a pie flavor, it's you know, we can do that, and we do it regularly. Even here, we've already launched a few new flavors. So yeah, we do that. You know, once a month or once every second month, we might bring out a new flavor. But
does Francoise have to come do that?
Well, we're lucky because we, funnily enough, in our Brooklyn kitchen, we actually have a French pastry chef.
Uh-huh.
And Spencer also spent time in Australia prior to us setting up the kitchen here, you know, in Brooklyn. So, you know, we're lucky that we've got talented people working for us in the kitchen. So it is easy. We might say, can we have, I don't know, like...
We tried a cheeseburger pie yesterday.
Right. That sounds pretty good, actually.
Yeah, you know, I'm not so sure about
it.
What
kind of cheese do you use?
I don't know. What was it?
Please say American.
It's American cheese, but we just need it more of it. Like I said, you have the cheeseburger pie. We need cheese in it. Like,
yeah.
We need to be able to taste it.
And we might do a turkey pie for Thanksgiving with the cranberry sauce.
What about a Philly cheesesteak pie?
Yeah,
I would love to do
that.
A Philly cheesesteak pie.
See, I think that would be better because there's more texture.
Yeah, what are you going to use cheese whiz in that?
Yeah, and also just the shredded beef.
You could get it with whiz or without, or with provolone, right? You get it one of three different ways.
Yeah, that makes sense because sautéing the onions and the garlic with the steak and then putting provolone cheese in for it, we could probably get that flavor profile better than cheeseburger, I think.
I guess it would be kind of hard to do a Australian Frito pie.
That would be good.
There's so
many American innovations.
But like instead of Fritos, Cheez-Its.
Cheez-Its. I would eat Cheez-Its on anything. I'm surprised you haven't been asked to do pizza.
Well, a lot of people think it is a pizza joint, you know.
They do? It's like, oh, pie.
You know, pie, oh, you know. But
we flirted with it.
We actually have flirted with little baby pizza, like pizzas, more like hot, almost like a hot flatbread sandwich.
Uh-huh. In Australia, actual pizza.
Yeah, they've got these things that are like a hybrid between pizza and a flatbread, you know, like panini or something.
Uh-huh.
And so we're working on maybe doing something like that, where it kind of almost has the texture of a pizza, but it's like a calzone, but sort of toast, you know, press toasted and hot, like something hot and, you know, more sandwich based than
Different than your actual pie model, not just pizza inside the pie.
Yeah, because we do gourmet sandwiches and we do soups and we do all that stuff too, so not everyone's going to have a pie every single day of the week. We'd like for them to, but you know, but we're realistic.
Australians will.
And so some people want sandwiches, or you know, if you're with four people, maybe three want a pie and one wants a sandwich.
HP sauce there, do you use any of that?
But I'm not familiar with it.
That's HP's, a British it's the, addiction.
It's the other pie place I went into, they had HP sauce, which is like the British version of A1 steak sauce, but put it on all their pies and everything.
It's like barbecue sauce.
It's made by Heinz, I think, right?
Oh, yeah. Are there any key Australian condiments?
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. That's what I was getting to.
We offer ketchup, which is tomato sauce. And in America, we don't charge for it. In Australia, we have to charge for it.
Really?
Yeah,
how come?
It's just expensive in Australia.
That's interesting.
But pretty much, you know, it's like, what do you put on your beautiful steak? You know, hopefully nothing.
Right.
So we tend not to recommend putting things on our pies because it kind of masks the actual fillings. But and we try to sort of we didn't mention this, but we do what we call a stack, which is our most popular item, and it's a pie with whole mashed potato and mashed pea and gravy on top.
Yum. Oh my God,
and so the gravy, you know, again, that's kind of our condiment, our own gravy and our own mashed pea and mashed potato.
Can you get those on the side too?
You can order just like a cup of like mash and gravy, which is really good.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, so that's kind of our condiment.
That sounds good. That sounds better than ketchup, at least from my point of view. I think John would disagree with me. He's a ketchup fan.
I put ketchup and mustard on everything.
Yes.
You know.
Well, I'm curious. So you've been living here for off and on for almost a year, looking for spaces.
Pretty much, yeah. I think we our apartment will have been there for a year in November.
What can you not find here that you crave to eat yourselves from home, or what do you like that you found here?
I'm still trying to find a really, really good local Thai restaurant.
You're gonna have to go to Queens.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Good advice.
I'll go with you.
And you live in Manhattan, so the closest in Brooklyn would be the Pock Pock place.
Oh yeah, have you been to Pock Pock?
No.
You should. Pock Pock. There's a tiny little wing shop in Lower Manhattan, and then he just opened. It's a guy from Portland. He's pretty well respected. He just opened up a Thai place in Brooklyn. Maybe it's even near where you make the pies. Near Red Hook.
And it's very close to you off the train. Like it would, you know, you take the R, I guess, and be
then
there.
Then for the real deal, you probably got to go to out on the 7 train.
Yeah.
Where do you think we should open Brooklyn if we decide to open one in Brooklyn?
I would say South Brooklyn, someplace. Right?
Off of Vanderbilt Ave.
Yeah. Well, someplace close, not North Brooklyn, meaning Williamsburg, Greenpoint. I would think you would belong somewhere near Atlantic Avenue, or maybe even Brooklyn Heights or Dumbo. Mm-hmm. That's my feeling. But not Greenpoint or Williamsburg. I think more South Brooklyn, Cobble Hill, Carroll Gardens. We should have people call in and tell us.
Yeah, you
could
go
open
to
on Vanderbilt, which
go
is
to our,
my
you
street.
Know, Facebook page and tell us, because we're getting a lot of requests for Soho, I think, right now. Oh. So we're
That's nice.
Yeah.
But you were talking about NYU.
Yeah, we're definitely opening. I mean, I can. Should I mention where we're opening our stores?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Okay, so the second store is about to open at 34th and 3rd, Murray Hill. There's a corner there.
Yeah, that place needs food too.
And it's late. Yeah, it seems evidently there's a lot of bars and people out looking for you know, food at night there. So,
so
that's the second store. Hopefully mid September. And then the third store is 7th Avenue, 36th Street. So it's near Madison Square Garden. And it's just busy there, you know. It's midtown.
Actually, speaking of Madison Square Garden, in Brooklyn, they're within a matter of weeks, probably they're opening up an arena, a new arena for the Brooklyn Nets. So someplace around, if you're 24 hours, someplace around there would be handy, which is also nice because that is also my neighborhood.
Okay. But I didn't realize there was a basketball.
It's brand new. It's being built. It's probably going to open in the next couple. Barbara Streisand is performing there for the first time in Brooklyn since she was 11 or something. But that's that would be a good location for you.
Okay.
Right around there.
Yeah.
And are all locations going to be 24 hour?
Pretty much,
that's
yeah.
Great. That's
all right. Our plan is that you never have to wonder whether we're open. You just know it. You know it's going to be open, sort of thing.
Because like your motto is so great because there's so many things that are happening to New York in the past 5 years where it's not. Its 24 hour reputation is kind of losing.
I agree. I'm actually a little bit concerned for your safety on New Year's Day. New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a piece of cake.
Are you preparing your plan for that right now?
Because they block all the streets off. So you have to have.
I cover it every year. It's a piece of cake. You're not going to have any problems.
We had our shop front like half built that New Year's Eve, and we were going, oh, it's just too bad we didn't get open. But
you have to. You must. You're going to have to make like a bazillion pies in advance for that.
Yeah,
day.
You're gonna be very busy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a little bit of, you have to kind of plan in advance because they do block the streets off and you can't get deliveries in and stuff, but anyway.
Your street traffic is just going to be ridiculous. Like,
yeah. You know. Probably, yeah.
Because the McDonald's is open, everyone else is open.
We have, Sydney, we have two stores on Oxford Street, which is like the big, and they have the Mardi Gras parade in Sydney, which is like the biggest gay Mardi Gras parade in the world, and like it's like a million people on the street. It's wild. And we have one store right in the middle of it, and it just goes crazy. You can't get near it. And
do you make a Mardi Gras pie?
We don't. You know what, Mardi Gras, it's quite distressing in a way, because when I watch the security cameras and the shop is just, you can't see the fixtures or fittings because it's just full of people. And I'm going, oh no, I should be down there helping the team down there, but oh no, it will take me 5 hours just to get in there now. So you just have to sit and watch.
Sometimes there can be too many people, you know.
I'm going to guess that the New Year's will be like that, because you're right there.
Yeah.
I think the place where they store the ball is like across the street from you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I can't wait for that. And then we've got a store opening in Chelsea too, 23rd and 7th.
Oh, that's nice.
So that's a little, you know, that's more of a neighborhood place. So, and then we Union Square, we're opening down there near, right at NYU actually, in one of the buildings there on 14th Street. And then we're looking at some other ones too on 8th Avenue.
Are you looking at a food truck at all? I'm curious.
We've been sort of flirting with the idea, but probably at some stage we align ourselves a lot with music. So like we're sponsoring the summer music festival, the Australia Day Music Festival, and I think it's in the park. Where is it this weekend? So we align ourselves with music. So we're thinking about maybe getting a food truck to go to all the concerts and sort of, you know,
Were you a musician at one time?
My dad used to play guitar, and I took drum lessons when I was little. Okay. And I always dreamed of being a rock star, but I never quite got there.
Well, food is the new rock, I've been told. There's another podcast called that. But you should be belong on there.
Traditionally, Aussie pies are like sports, right? It's sort of the male gender thing, and it's all about sport and beer drinking, and our pies are all about, you know, arts and music and creativity. And
oh, that's what's very much on purpose. It's something that you think about. That's
because we want it to appeal to all, you know, types, not just the men. So half of our customers are women. Little kids are big fans because of our faces, and you know, the kids love that. So we have like everybody as customers, as opposed to, and we tend to want to keep it quirky and creative. So we tend to align ourselves with the music and the arts and that sort of thing.
I want to hear more about the fillings as we wind this down. So tell me, what are the best sellers different in Australia and the United States?
Same.
No, it's pretty much the same.
What are they?
Chunky steak and the chicken and mushroom.
I love it when you say chunky steak.
The same.
But you know what sells better here than in Australia is bacon and egg pies.
Yeah.
I can see that.
Oh, man. Do you put, what do you put in there? Like, how's the egg cooked?
We actually used to crack a whole egg and drop it in, and then put the bacon and stuff in, but it tends to dry out. So we now whip it up like an omelet and then pour it in.
Mm.
You do bacon there too? Is it the same kind of bacon?
Yeah, I think the bacon actually is better here.
The bacon's definitely better in the US than in Australia. So there's good bacon in there, there's tomato in there, like it's seasoned. It's bacon egg pie is nice. nice.
And we used to do a different breakfast pie. It was like ricotta cheese, spinach, sun-dried tomato. So mm-hmm. it was like a total vegetarian breakfast pie.
And that's it sounds like a lady pie.
The breakfast pie, that's all day long. Yeah. All day and all night.
Yeah, okay. Basically, yeah. And the thing is, like, Australians aren't used to having breakfast pies. We sort of invented that. But the Americans don't know that Australians don't eat them for breakfast, so they just started eating them for breakfast. So we actually sell more here than we do in Australia, and they're actually really good. They beat an Egg McMuffin any day.
Oh yeah,
it sounds awesome. I like the idea that when you, I like the idea of the original when you just crack the whole egg right in. But
you know what? We've done a lot more the sweet pies. We've actually really kind of amped that up, and we've done a lot of work on the sweet pies. So as Betty was saying, we've got like 13 different sweet pie flavors now, and. And they're all really popular, you know, and people buy 12 of them. They usually pick one of each. But that's definitely something that is really going well here. And that's Francois' French heritage, again, coming through.
Which, he's your brother? He's, brother-in-law.
He's my brother-in-law, but now Wayne and I are married. Okay. But we have people... We have been dating for, like, 20 years, so we know each other very well. So it's handy working together that way, because... We know where we stand with everything.
Was it his idea to take the croissant type crust and turn it into the pie?
It's funny because we started out making our pies and he made his, and then when we got together, they were quite similar in terms of the way, but the guy that was making ours was also a French trained pastry chef, so he was kind of doing it a similar way. So we kind of then combined all the knowledge into one, but pretty much we were doing it, I mean, very much the same way, even though we weren't together.
That's I wish that we had had one in front of us so we could describe it.
It's really golden, you know, it's a golden brown. It's like a little like a little flying saucer, basically.
That sounds nice. And but is that, and you're, are they, they're not in like a little shell or anything?
No, but with our pies, we have, to make it more portable, we have what we call our little pie packs, which is like a little envelope that the pie slides into. So it's late at night. If you've been drinking and you're walking to the subway, you can grab a few. You won't spill it. You won't get it over your nice party clothes. Or eat it in the pack.
That's great.
I was actually... So you were never tempted? They might even have them. You were never tempted to give all the people who work in the shops uniforms, since that's what you used to do?
Yeah, well, we do have
design uniforms. Design their clothing.
Do you know what we used to? And I still get requests in Australia from like fine dining restaurants to design their uniforms. And I haven't done fashion in like 8 years, and it's so far from.
But we do still have we still design the uniform they wear, and they're called pie dealers.
Pie dealers.
And our customers are pie addicts, and and our kitchen guys are called pie makers. So the pie dealer uniform is something, and we actually changed it from America.
Oh, the uniforms? What's the difference?
Higher apron.
That's about it.
A chef.
Because we're
chef
more modest.
We have this. We have them with little conductor hats, and it says hat, you know, with a smiley face. Uh-huh. Everything's got a smiley face, and everywhere there's an A like hat, it's a smiley face. So conductor caps and chef's jackets and aprons. So they look like some sort of train conductor meets some sort of chef.
We are changing it, though. They're in our T-shirts now.
Yeah, now it's summertime, so they're in T-shirts.
It's too hot for them.
And they are, well, did you guys design those together? How did the design label work? Were you both actually fashion designers?
Yeah, sort of.
Yeah, I started, I had a midlife crisis at 26 and went to fashion school at night while I was banking. So I was kind of a closet designer, trying to be. And then Betty and I were dating, and then she started helping me with my homework. And, you know, before we knew it, we started running the label full-time, and she was running it full-time, and I was kind of doing it outside of work, basically.
Well, we are almost out of time, so one last time, tell people where you are located and where they can find you.
We're currently open at 53rd and Broadway in Midtown at David Letterman Theater. And that's open 24/7, you know, anytime, just turn up. You can also go to our website, piefacenyc.com. We do a lot of catering as well, so we're catering to a lot of businesses and, like, you know, the Actors Fund we just did a thing with, and we're doing lots of things.
We've also just started literally yesterday, because yesterday was Wednesday. We started between 8 a.m. and 9 a.m. Wake up. Is it Wake Up on Wednesdays?
Wake Me Up Wednesdays.
Wake Me Up Wednesdays. Well, if you come and see us, because you get 50% off all our espresso. So if you want to try a flat white or latte, come and see us between 8 and
9 a.m. on Wednesdays.
I'd also recommend that everyone go to their Facebook page and tell them where to open up one and what next neighborhood to go to.
That'd be great.
Thank you guys so much for coming.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was wonderful.
Thank you. Meet your maker.
No worries. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.